One game, Greg Wyshynski. One game for Chris Bartsch for the alleged racial slur directed the way of P.K. Subban in the Florida Panthers-Montreal Canadiens game as overheard by Dennis Gibbs, NHL official. But you know what, Greg? I'm confused. I am confused because if you read the great George Richards, whom we've had on the program here for the Miami Herald, wonderful guy, wonderful writer, it is a one-game suspension, even though, according to Chris Bartsch, Colin Campbell, who handled this affair, told Bartsch if the NHL thought it was a racial slur, he would have been given anywhere between 5 to 10 games. Now, as we talked about on the podcast yesterday, and as more information comes out today, the alleged slur was after the P.K. Subban, Eric Goodbranson fight, P.K. Subban's getting back to the Montreal bench. Chris Bartsch said, what happened? Did you slip on a banana peel? Because Subban fell down during the Goodbranson scrap. Now, it's up to everybody, including Colin Campbell, whether you consider that to be racist. Would he have said that to any other player? Probably. I don't think it's a very creative taunt or a creative jest, but nonetheless, that's not the subject we're discussing now. Where I get confused is, if Chris Bartsch is correct and Colin Campbell said that this wasn't a racist taunt, why is he suspended even a game?
Ah, now we get to the crux of the situation. And as an American, I can speak to this with some authority. You are talking about racial taunts and racial slurs, and that's the N-word, and calling someone a monkey, and making fun of their parents, and the cultural stuff. Those are racial slurs. The banana peel is racial insensitivity, Merrick. There's a difference.
Ah. Now, does this mean we will get a guide from the National Hockey League, much like we get the rules at the beginning of each year, much like we get the instructional videos at the beginning of each year? These are terms that will not be allowed on the ice. And you know what? Even more, listen, there are a few words that may slip out on the show which are very unpleasant to people's ears. And I, for one, am going to try not to use them, but if it slips out, I apologize in advance. There is a word, a very homophobic word, that players use each and every time they're on the ice. It begins with F and it ends with T. I will not use that word as much as I can today, but instead I will use the term pickle. So whenever I say pickle, you know what I'm really talking about.
You know what he means.
How
he
many
means,
times?
He means
yeah.
Fat. Oh, no, you mean.
Well, that comes up too, by the way, right. A number of times, namely with the New Jersey Devils netminder and one of the forwards from the Winnipeg Jets. And come on, you know what happens. You know what happens.
Of course it happens. Avery copped to it. He called him fat.
Yeah.
So one of the greatest
totally.
Times of all time.
So considering how much the word pickle is used each and every shift in the NHL, does that mean that pretty much every shift there could be a suspension in the National Hockey League?
It could. As we know, Merrick, one of the keys to this suspension, this one-game suspension for Chris Bartsch for saying, did you slip on a banana peel, is the fact that the linesman snitched on him. And the linesman was able to say to the National Hockey League, yes, I heard this, and yes, I gave him a game misconduct for it. And so you have an official on record having heard this.
Yeah.
When Wayne Simmonds was called to the carpet for allegedly calling Sean Avery a pickle, nice. No one heard it. None of the officials heard it. So they couldn't go and suspend Wayne Simmonds because,
Wasn't
you know, the minute you label a guy a homophobe and claim that he said that horrible word to somebody, well, then all of a sudden you're talking about affecting his earning potential as a sponsor, as a guy who can go to and operate a youth camp, you know, all that other stuff. So they're wary of all that with it not being on the record, with them trying to read lips from the Simmonds thing. In this case, they heard somebody say it, and the linesman can back it up, and then it becomes a matter of context, like you said. To me, this is, you know what this is, Merrick? This is the hockey version of the Howard Cosell, that little monkey can get loose, can't he, kind of thing.
Yep.
This
yep.
is a matter of half the people will think that there's simply no way that Chris Bartsch using the word banana at a black player is not intentional. And there's going to be another segment of fans that think that this is a chirp that you'd hear on the ice, whether it's a white or a black player, and it just happened to be one of those head slap, oh my God, yeah. I just made a Holocaust joke to a Jew moments.
Yep. And yeah.
But before we go on, I want to point out that I don't make Holocaust jokes by rule.
Nor do I. Having okay, said good. That, it all depends on the ears that it falls on, and you're right. And everyone has, you know, some people have thin skin, some people have thick skin. Some people are able to tai chi these kinds of things, like the dudes in the park first thing in the morning and just let it breeze by, and it doesn't affect them. And other guys really take it to heart and really hang on to it, right? A lot of guys, I remember, who was I talking to? Paul Stewart, as a matter of fact, and he was bringing up an incident where Theo Fleury was called, and Theo Fleury was one of the loudest beakers on the ice, and he would call everybody everything until someone made a joke about rehab to him on the ice, and he went screaming to Paul Stewart about a suspension, and this guy needs to be kicked out of the game, and just that. So it all depends on how thick or thin-skinned you are. Kevin McClelland of the Edmonton Oilers, almost single-handedly, with a number of... Again, I'm going to use the term pickle. A number of pickle taunts almost drove Stéphane Richer out of the league, right? He was just relentless on Stéphane Richer. But Kevin McClelland, if you talk to anyone who ever played with him, he was the one guy who could dish it out but just couldn't take it. Because if he said anything about Kevin McClelland, that was it. He would go banana sandwich. He just couldn't handle it, right? Because it all depends on the ears that it falls on. And the slippery slope to all of this when it comes to interpretation, because I agree with Barch, I agree with his agent, you know, that I don't, unless you know the person and know the intention, how can you know intention? All you can do is extrapolate from your own beliefs. I don't know, but I would tend to believe that Chris Barch wouldn't use this deliberately as a slur. If you're going to use a slur, you go with something stronger. Right? If he wanted to make a racial comment, I think he would have gone for the obvious one, and that is the N-word. I think this is the slaphead moment you talk about. But it all depends on what you're offended by. And if you start to get into the game of suspending people for language, let me give you a couple of scenarios here. And you brought up the Wayne Simmons one, and that's a great one. I have to be very vague about this scenario that I'm going to paint out for you here, because I don't want to give away the parties involved, because it wouldn't be right for me to do so. There was an incident on a Canadian National Hockey League rink. I won't say when, but it is within the last...
Give us a range. Last 10 years.
Last 10 years. And okay. It happened during a pregame skate where one player said to another player, I sleep with gorgeous women every single night. They're beautiful. Some of them are models. Some of them are superstars. You, sir, married the slut of the Ontario Hockey League. She slept with everyone, including me. That drove the other player bananas.
Can I make a guess? Was the person taunting Daniel Alfredson?
No! I'm not going to say. Okay. It doesn't matter how many beers you pour into me one day, Wish. I ain't going to tell you who it is. Well, maybe I will over a couple of beers. But
gotcha.
Anyway, gotcha. Here's where you start to contextualize. Is that a suspendable comment?
No.
Pretty offensive.
Is it a suspendable comment? It's
offensive. You're talking with someone's wife, dude. You're talking with someone's wife,
Well, you know, then you get into the sloppy seconds thing. That's the problem when you start policing language, okay?
There you go.
The Simmons thing, everybody looked at and said that should have been a suspension or a fine. It wasn't. This thing happens. A lot of people are saying, once they find out it's the banana peel thing, that it's all about context, that's embarrassing, it's an unfortunate slip of the lip, but it doesn't warrant a suspension. A lot of people say no, maybe just a fine. And then you get into the whole sloppy seconds thing, taunting of girlfriends, players' wives, yada, yada, yada. That's what happens when you start playing PC cop, when you start playing the language game. And it brings us to our question of the day, by the way. Should the NHL police language on the ice? And should the NHL take supplemental discipline against language on the ice?
Should the NHL, or can the NHL, Greg, I would even submit, can they even credibly be in that business given what we've seen and they've allowed on HBO's 24/7?
Well,
because the idea is that it is actions unbecoming of the NHL. Right, I'm sure if we get a press release from Colin Campbell, the NHL, that is going to be the wording on it. That is going to be what it is about. But we've seen now, you know, two seasons of HBO 24/7. It ain't pretty. It's really nasty. It's borderline. Every time they're on the ice and you hear the chirps, you can say someone will be offended by something. That is hockey.
True, but
if you don't like it, I would say maybe the game's not for you.
But what they're selling with 24/7 is uncensored, but that's not what we're getting. I mean, even that is protected. There are certain things
I agree.
Okay, for example, there's two things that I know for sure. Okay. One player, and I'll protect them on this one, unfortunately, even though I want to tell you who it is. One player called another team a bunch of pussies, and it got cut out of the show. Okay.
I know that one.
Another player dropped the infamous C word for female genitalia during a game. That was cut from a show. In both cases, was that the right decision? I don't know. If you're trying to sell me uncensored and you're censoring, it's probably not the right decision. But in both cases, we see that there are limits to language and that the NHL is willing to give us PG-13, maybe pushing an R, but they're not willing to go everywhere with language, and now they're in the business, Merrick, of policing it.
Can they be? Should they be? I suppose, and that is the question of the day. And we have, you know, and there's a wide variety of answers that we've received so far, and a lot of it is you can say whatever you want. I believe in free speech as long as it's not racist or homophobic. Well, then you're not really married to free speech. And you know what? A lot of people are bringing up, and Tommy Huds on Twitter just brought it up a second ago, the Hanrahan bit from Slapshot, right, about Suzanne. Like, how would that go over in the? In the NHL right now. So
couple of things before we get to the intro, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that.
with regard to Pickle, this is from
Pickle just sounds funnier than the other word too.
Mike Pelucci, who's a Devils fan that I know. Boy, do I really feel sorry for Mark Edward Vlasic.
Oh, sorry. Oh, geez. There you go, right? I'm taunting Mark Edward Vlasic.
And then also from Wayne Whitaker chimes in, Holocaust jokes aren't funny, and frankly, I won't stand for them.
Oh, holy smokes.
Wow.
From Brett Isles, absolutely they should suspend for racist/homophobic comments. Sports won't truly be inclusive until it's gone. You know, part of the charm? Now, I'm not going to defend racism or homophobia, but isn't part of the charm about sports is that it exists as a different reality where you suspend a lot of your rights, i.e. I will let you hit me in order that compete for something. I mean, why should that not extend to language?
I agree with you. That's the point I made on Puck Daddy today. It's that all the time these guys do things on the ice, in the rink, that they would not do at Starbucks the next morning, okay?
Yep.
And this is a part of it. And policing language and trying to play that game, yeah, listen, no one wants the NHL to be tarnished with some guy after the game saying, I got called the N-word, or, mm-hmm. you know, I got called a pickle. It makes the league look bad. It makes hockey look bad. But at the same time, it is Thunderdome out there. They're doing and saying things that they would never do away from the rink to achieve the ultimate goal. And I don't know, man. There's something weird about trying to police that.
It's a different world. And part of, you know what, every time you hear someone talk about why they love sports, they always come back to the same thing. It's escapist. I can forget about my day. I can forget about normal everyday life, my 9-to-5 job and all of it, and I can just escape into sports. Honestly, it really is a different world and a different reality. That is the danger I think you enter. I'm with you on this one, Wish. I think that's the danger you enter and the slippery slope you can go down when you get the language cops out there. And until I see a dictionary. What's that?
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, until the NHL puts out the language dictionary, what's acceptable and what's not acceptable, boy, you think players are confused about rules. Now introduce language around. Like, every time you hear it, someone calls someone else a pickle, are they going to, like, turn to their officials and say, you didn't hear that, right?
Here's my question to you. How slippery is that slope? Is it like a banana peel? Because if it is there, I am patently offended by your language. All right, let's start the show.
We got to start the show now.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
That's a hockey, you know. It's only a game. Why do you have to be mad?
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Sedin is not English for punch me or headlock me in a scrum.
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Hey, Greg, guess what?
What?
I just got a note here on Twitter. I think you did as well. From Mark Cole, our good buddy. Odessa Steps, recognize. Elena's Countdown makes the show awesome. Top of the show, we got Elena's Countdown.
Oh,
so
really?
We have to do that, but yeah, because we're in two different cities.
That's so funny. I didn't realize that made the air.
And she's the maestro conducting things.
Too funny.
Back from home base at the Fan.
Too funny. Coming up in a second, Travis Hughes from Broad Street Hockey to talk about a real interesting story you may have seen with regard to a bunch of Flyers fans beating up a couple Rangers fans, one of them being an off-duty cop who is also an Iraq war veteran. And Travis did some fantastic effing work to try to track these guys down. And and change the conversation about the stereotypical representation of the Flyers fans in the media. Later on, Andy Strickland of TrueHockey.com talking about the St. Louis Blues sale, the Blues in general, and other NHL matters. Later on, the wit and wisdom of Brian Burke, not me, the real one. And he is talking about the future of pests and enforcers in the National Hockey League.
And rats. And not and the rats. The girls you find hanging around the rink either. Like the actual, well, not actually not the actual rats. Those were in Florida. Thank you, Scott Mellenby. But no, the rats, like the fourth line pest and the fourth line agitator, to which Steve Yzerman once said coming out of the lockout, we're replacing the fourth line tough guy with the fourth line pest. I don't know we're a better sport because of it.
Mm.
All that later
exactly.
on.
Exactly. That's right. Also, Shea Weber back tonight, buddy. What do you think?
Hey, it's interesting, too, because they shut Shea Weber down from speaking to the media, and I think a lot of his teammates were kind of surprised by that, too. And the entire team kind of played Danny the Dunce on it and didn't say a word. But that's, listen, that team, that guy is that team, period. Can you think of one player who, like, I think if they don't re-sign Shea Weber, it's almost as if David Poile, God, this is going to sound harsh, it's almost one of those, like, just throw the keys on the table kind of moment.
Oh.
The one thing about yeah, you
are
know
you
why?
Are you out of your mind?
No.
If they let Shea Weber leave, but they keep Suter and Pekka Rinne, that's turned the keys in? Come
yeah,
on.
Because he is face of the franchise. Because you know what that says to your marketplace?
That's bull.
Here's
I
a guy
no,
drafted,
no, no. You so
drafted,
wrong
no, drafted, developed, within the program, groomed through the program, became a Norris Trophy candidate, became a gold medal athlete, became the face of the franchise. But when it came time to pay him to keep him, we just can't hang at that level. That's a bad message to the marketplace. Even if they keep Suter.
You can't keep everybody. You have three guys that are going to make a lot of coin. If you keep two, and then one goes off and becomes the highest paid player in the league, I think you're still. The Bulls didn't fold when Jordan left. It became Pippen's team.
How many times did they win?
Joining us now on the line from SB Nation, the NHL editor, and the editor of BroadStreetHockey.com, he is Travis Hughes. Welcome to Merrick versus Vyshynski, Travis. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, it was good to see you at the Winter Classic as well. I had better seats than you, but we both sat behind ESPN, so I think we're all bitter about that.
Yeah.
So you did some really, really cool stuff with this story. If you haven't read it, or haven't seen the video, a group of three Flyers fans, or as Travis put it, people wearing Flyers jerseys, attacked two Rangers fans outside of Geno's Cheesesteaks down on South Street, and it was just a brutal beating. It comes out that one of the guys they beat up is an off-duty cop from Woodbridge, New Jersey, who also was an Iraq War veteran, was awarded the Purple Heart, and Travis led the charge to try to figure out who these guys were that were besmirching the good name of Flyers fans, and in fact, may have tracked down one.
Yeah.
Travis, what's the update? What did you find out?
First off, let's just say that going to Geno's Steaks is the first mistake anybody made, because that place is horrible. But
Tony Luke's, yeah. Right? Tony Luke's is the best one, right?
Tony Luke's is up there, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, if I had to pick, I'd probably go to Tony Luke's. But, yeah, Geno's is horrible. But, so this video was, you know, I saw it on Facebook. I guess it was Tuesday night. Like, a bunch of my Facebook friends just posted it on Facebook. Like, you know, it started to go viral. And I wrote a story about it on Tuesday. Just, you know, basically, you know, I think that's how you have to combat the stereotype. Like, if, you know, nobody's going to believe us that, you know, Philly fans aren't generally scum. And when things like this happen, you have to alienate it. You have to call them out for it. And that's exactly what I did. And I didn't expect anything to really come of it, to be honest with you. I just kind of wanted to say, you know, just to kind of, you know, alienate and ostracize these people from, you know, the general Flyers fan, you know, community of Flyers fans. And that was kind of the only purpose of writing the original post, where basically I just said, you know, this video is out there. This happened. These guys in Flyers jerseys jumped these guys in Rangers jerseys, and it's BS. And you know, if anybody knows anything, then you should probably call the police. And apparently, we didn't have to call the police because somebody stepped up and said that they did it on our Facebook page, on our comment,
and they were kind of
story on our Facebook.
they were kind of incredulous about it. They were like almost taunting you and saying, yeah, come after us. And at the same time, revealing themselves to have been caught on video assaulting somebody.
Right, exactly. And honestly, who knows if they even did it? They might just be, I mean, they're like 19, 20 years old, and maybe they're just not all that bright, and they thought it was a big joke. But, I mean, I don't understand why you would admit to a crime if you didn't do it.
You know what it reminds me of, Travis, more than anything else, and this is what I thought of when I read your piece as well. This reminds me of Vancouver, when a lot of the rioters right away on Facebook, that was the best night of my life. Look what I stole. Are you nuts?
Yeah. And that's kind of what I felt. Got caught because of that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's just, I mean, I guess people don't realize that, you know, the internet is a thing that a lot of people have, and, you know, we can see what you write on it. I don't know. It really is kind of incredulous. It's like, it doesn't make any sense.
Based on the All-Star results, I see they got the internet in Ontario. That's impressive. hey, listen, I wanted to ask you about one specific aspect of the story because I found it real curious. Yeah. So the setup to the fight between these guys and the Rangers fans was that they hired a homeless guy to go over and spray the Rangers fans with windshield washing fluid or water or whatever they're using to clean things. Is this a common prank in Philadelphia to hire the homeless to, like, punk people?
Not that I know of, but I don't – well, again, I don't frequent the area near Geno's Steak, so who knows? Maybe in that neighborhood. I don't know. I mean, the one thing that bugged me about it in the aftermath, like, a lot of people are like, oh, well, you don't know if the Rangers fans started it. Well, you know what? Even if they did, even if they were mouthing off or something, you don't take it to that level, obviously. And – you know, the other part of it is that, you know, I think, I don't know, it's just, it doesn't, I'm just sitting here, I can't wrap my head around it, I really can't, and I can't wrap my head around how anybody would defend it, because so many people have, I've seen even Rangers fans, like, why would you snitch on one of your own kind? It's like, it's a sports team.
That's insane.
It's a human story. It's not a sports story, Travis. And that's why, you know, I think we're all on the same page about this. It, you know, listen, what you've done is a really good thing. One of my initial questions was, you know, after I was just bowled over at the sheer stupidity of the alleged assailants, is, man, I hope Travis is going to be okay out of all this. Like, how much have you been now branded? Oh, yeah, look at you snitching on Flyers fans. We're a tight-knit community. We got to stay together. Like, how much of this has come back on you?
A couple people have said something, and there was actually some concern in my comments. Like, hopefully this guy doesn't have any sociopathic friends. But I don't know. I don't really. What's that?
He didn't seem the type to have sociopathic friends.
No. Well, yeah. But I mean, it can't. I guess it could. I actually part of you know, when I was trying to dig everything up, I added the guy on Facebook. Like, I became his Facebook friend, and he accepted my friend request, which I didn't think he would do either. But so I guess maybe he could have seen some of my more personal information that way. But I don't know. I'm not terribly. I don't know. I guess it could, but I don't know. I think it takes some savvy for anything to come back to me. Seriously.
You know what's interesting about this whole thing, though? You know, like, so like you and I are. I'm a Devils fan. You're a Flyers fan. We've both seen our share of chicanery at games. And you know, before you hopped on, we were talking about the Chris Bartsch thing and how certain things that happen on the ice, be it language, be it violence, if it happened in real life, you'd be arrested for it or you'd get punched in the face for it. And I can't help but think that if you or I were in the cheap seats in either of our respective arenas and we saw something like this go down, it'd be a different dynamic, wouldn't it? Like then it becomes, why are you snitching on your own kind if there's a fight in the upper deck?
Say that again. Sorry, I didn't hear the end of that.
I was going to say, if a fight like this happened in the upper deck, in the cheap seats, then it almost becomes a thing like, then you would be called out for snitching. Then you'd be that guy pointing to the usher and saying, it's this guy who did it, you know, if it was your own fan that got into the fight. It'd be kind of a different dynamic if it had happened in the arena for some reason, I think.
I think it would be. I think it totally changes the dynamic when it's in the street. But, and also, I think that Say I'm at Prudential Center and we're in the cheap seats and a fight breaks out between a Flyer and a Devil fan and I'm the one that says, hey, that Flyer fan started it. Then that would be, I feel like that, you know, I would be called out for snitching in that case. But on the street, I think it's complete. And not that that's right either. But I feel like that's definitely. But like you said, it's when it's in the arena, it's different. On the flip side, if we were at Prudential Center and you said something about, hey, that Devils fan started it, I feel like it would be to a certain extent. But because when you're on the road, it's, you know, you're by yourself there. You have to stick together. That whole thing. I feel like that would kind of make the situation a little.
Yeah, but honestly, Travis, if there was a fight at Prudential Center. I mean, it's pretty easy to beat up an empty seat. I mean, honestly, it's not going to really put up that much of a. He just kind of folded it up.
Back in the 2010 playoffs, I was in the Chiefs seat at Prudential Center for, I think it was game two. I think that was the one game the Flyers lost in that series. And I saw the Devils mascot. I don't even know what his name is, but he had a giant drumstick. And it was like play was about to start up again, and a Flyers fan was trying to get back up to their seats. And the guy is banging his drum. And the Flyers fan's trying to get by him because he's standing in the stairwell banging his drum. And the Flyers fan's trying to get up by him, and the mascot hits the Flyers fan in the head with the drum.
Whoa.
And he was clearly kidding, but I think he did it a little too hard. And then the Flyers fan got upset about it because A, he was just trying to watch the playoff game, and B, he just got assaulted by a cartoon. So he kind of got in the face of the mascot, which was a little funny, and then he wound up getting kicked out of the game over basically a fight with the mascot. And I don't know if that goes back to the Philly fan stereotype or not. Like maybe if I don't know, because he was a Philly fan, everybody just kind of assumed that he started it with the mascot. I'm not really sure, but
yeah, weird.
Travis, do you think there is a, not to make this too much of a kumbaya moment, but do you think there is a place here for a coming together in a lot of ways of the New York Rangers and the Philadelphia Flyers? And that was a nasty winter classic, but do you think it's incumbent on the Philadelphia Flyers organization? Ed Snyder can do stuff like this, make it happen quick like Jack DeBear. For Ed Snyder to do something for those two Rangers fans that were assaulted?
I think so. I think it should happen. I don't know if it will happen, but, I think it definitely should happen. I think it's the perfect opportunity to stand up and say, hey, you know, this isn't who Flyers fans are, you know. And I mean, Ed Snyder has to be cognizant of the reputation that Philadelphia sports fans have, obviously.
Well, the thing is, I mean, the Flyers have always, you know, celebrated. I mean, how many times have we seen the Philadelphia Flyers, again, show the not that it should relate off the ice, to your point, Travis, and I agree with you, but the reputation that's been cultivated around the Philadelphia Flyers is Dave Schultz beating up Dale Rolfe.
Sure. Exactly. Yeah, you're right. And on the flip side of it, not that it makes it, you know, the whole thing, you know, the victim is a cop and a war veteran and a war hero. Not that it's any worse if the guy he beat up wasn't a war hero, but literally every single Philadelphia Flyers game, you know, the Flyers honor war veterans. And I think that's the perfect opportunity to do something. Maybe they bring him to the next Flyer Ranger game in Philadelphia and they honor him. And, I think it's a perfect opportunity. I really do.
Yeah, it really couldn't have been any worse than if he, like, pushed him out of a wheelchair and then threw his grandmother down the rocky steps. It really couldn't have been
really
any worse than that.
Last thing for
me, buddy. The Winter Classic experience for Philadelphia, how would you rate it if you had to give it a grade, just overall for the city and for fans?
I think it was great. I really do. If I had to put a number on it, I'd probably, you know, if they won the game, it obviously, I think it would have been a 10. But, you know, considering they lost the game, I'd say, and I mean, this whole thing obviously tars it a little bit, but I'd give it about an 8. I think it was a really great experience. I really think that the story of the whole thing for Philadelphia, for the Flyers organization, is Eric Lindros coming back. I mean, he was,
right.
You know, he's been alienated from the organization for, you know, over a decade now, and, you know, he was welcomed back with open arms, and it was really great to see, and I hope that he's around the organization more often, because the Flyers keep around all of these guys that have meant so much to the organization, and he's one of them that should be around, and he hasn't been for obvious reasons, but he's one that definitely should be around, because, you know, he basically defined a decade of Flyers hockey.
Travis, last one on this microphone. How is Philadelphia reacting to the snub of Claude Giroux on the All-Star game?
Wait, there was All-Star balloting going on? I didn't even... Yeah, I mean, he's going to be on the team anyway. So,
yep.
I mean, It doesn't matter. Yeah, I mean, the system is silly. Just the fact that fans are only voting for six, and then you know, the NHL, they're coming down from on high and voting for the rest of them. That just makes it all kind of, I don't know, just silly to me. I don't even think I voted once. Like, it just
blame Rory Fitzpatrick because he scared the hell out of the National Hockey League.
Well, and I'll say, come on,
Rory
and the Montreal fans too, who hacked the planet and found a way around the system. Them too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Hey, Travis, man, you should be real proud of the work you did. It was great stuff, and it's a thrill. It's a thrill to be a fan of your blog and then see it like mentioned in like the Daily Mail in the UK for doing a really good job. So, keep it up, man, and hopefully you get your Batman on and you track down those guys, Vigilante.
Do it, bro. Way to go. Way to go, Travis.
Appreciate it, guys.
Take care, man.
Appreciate
you guys.
Thanks for having me.
Travis,
you want it? Yeah. Hey, maybe you know this story from the Winter Classic because you were there and I wasn't. Did you hear about the alumni game beforehand when the Flyers went in the Rangers dressing room?
I actually was not there for the alumni game, so I did not hear this story.
Oh, that's right. Okay, the Flyers went into the Rangers alumni dressing room. You know what they said?
What's that?
Bernie's going in for 5 minutes. Nobody scores.
Really?
Yeah, which I think is kind of cool. Hey, it's Bernie, man. Sure, you could torch the guy, yeah, but so, you know what? Just throw it at the pillows.
So wait a second. You're saying that he didn't really like throw the glove around and flash the pads and
dude, they shot right at him. Come on. Oh. No one scores on Bernie.
I gave him third star that game.
He should have been first star just because he was out there and he burned his friggin'
I didn't keel over.
That's why. That's why he should have been La Premier Etoile, as they say in the Bell Center, first star, yo. Just to see him out there was fantastic.
Couple things before Andy Strickland hops on. Oilers announced Nugent Hopkins out 3 to 4 weeks with the left shoulder injury.
Does that cost him the Calder?
Well, he does hear the Adam Henrique footsteps, doesn't he?
Oh, there you go. And if you go back to the... See, I've been a supporter of Adam Henrique going back to when he should have been the Memorial Cup MVP in 2009, but some guy named Taylor Hall, whatever, even though Adam Henrique was the better player in the tournament, although Jamie Benn was really good in that tournament too. I'd go back with Adam Henrique that far. And I honestly, Greg, he was one of those guys that I looked at on that stacked Windsor team, and as everyone's talking about Taylor Hall, said whoever scoops up Adam Henrique has got a superstar. It's going to take them a little bit longer to get there, but they got a good one. Bravo to the New Jersey Devils. And if Adam Henrique wins it, well-deserved. This guy's played hard and worked hard to get there. I'm on Team Henrique, man.
As a Devils fan, the notion of anybody but Adam Larson winning the Calder this year for the Devils was alien to me in October. So that's how much progress this kid's made this year. Let's see here. A couple things before we get rocking and rolling here. Alexander, who's a big Buffalo Sabres fan, huge mistake regarding the one-game suspension on Chris Barch. LGBT community should be all over this, meaning why didn't they suspend Wayne Simmonds? Hey, listen, man, I agree. I think it's if like I said, if they could show that Simmonds did what he did, and I think the video shows he did, then they should have suspended him and they should have fined him. And it's sad that now we have this, dude. It's like every other ruling from this league. Now all of a sudden we've got an entire aggrieved populace that looks at the situation as completely hypocritical.
Yep. And now you're going to be waiting to see what everyone mouths in scrums and to see which officials are around and then question whether those officials told the game supervisor or not. Right? Because you'll see it in every scrum. If you can read lips, man, this is a nasty. You know who who wins out of all this? You know who still gets away scot-free and can say Russians. Man, if I'm Russian, I do all my chirping in Russian. I'm just laying down the nastiest stuff out there. I'm doing it all in Russian, bro. Like
there
stuff
you
that would
you,
get even, you know, 10 games, 20 games, do it all in Russian, skate away, no problem.
For sure. And again, like I saw somebody has decided to unfollow me or vow to never read the blog again because I'm not all up in arms about the banana thing. I just don't think that we know. I don't think we can go into Chris Barch's head, clear away the cobwebs, push away the old furniture and figure out whether he meant it racially or not. I just don't know. Because, like I said, I've had players tell me that this banana peel thing is just like a go-to chirp for some guys during a fight. If he falls out.
Oh, slipped on a banana peel, did you? Did you see?
So,
to me,
I mean,
the question would Chris, like I said yesterday, would Chris Barch have said this to Lars Eller, Scott Gomez, Hal Gill, go right down the line, Brian Gionta, if they fell during a fight? And the answer is yes.
I can't believe... I can't believe we haven't brought this up yet. Before we get to
Lars Eller?
Lars Eller.
Oh, the hat trick? Well, now the hats hit the ice, right?
Somebody had the line of the night last night, and I apologize for not remembering who it was. I'm not trying to shamelessly steal this. On Twitter, somebody when if you don't know, a sex toy hit the ice last night during Lars Eller's hat trick. There's hats on the ice, and then a phallus next to it.
It's like you don't bring sex toys to the rink, Greg. Yeah, come on.
Somebody on Twitter last night writes, "It didn't something along the lines of it didn't surprise me because of all the other dicks wearing red in the crowd."
Oh, the fighter takes the knee, standing eight count.
But we were saying before the show that
it's emblematic of at least Montreal is considered the city of love in Canada. That's our Paris, right? That's where it all goes down. La cité d'amour, comme on dit en français. That is the city of love right there. So why not?
But listen. This is not
Edmonton with
free reign. Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. It's not free reign now to make a dildo the new octopus or dead duck for Montreal. Okay,
I'd rather see that.
Okay,
I do.
No,
I do.
If we get a bunch of dildos thrown on the ice during a Habs game, you know what you're going to wind up with? A stiff fine. I'm sorry. Joining us now on the line from TrueHockey.com.
What? I almost said you're in the wrong line of business, but you know what? You're in the right line of business.
That's true. Joining us now on the line from TrueHockey.com, he is Andy Strickland. He knows a thing or two about the St. Louis Blues, and he joins us now on the line. How are you, Andy?
Why don't you guys just keep talking? It's a lot more entertaining.
Strickland.
Hey, Andy, what's the weirdest thing you've ever seen? For me, there's been a couple. And Carey Fraser wrote about once when he was coaching in junior getting hit in the head by a cowbell in Saskatoon during a Blades game. Is a dildo the weirdest thing you've ever seen hit the ice?
I don't know if you can get any weirder than the actual dildo. You know, I mean, can you go any greater than a dildo?
I don't know.
On the ice at a hockey game?
I don't know
if you can.
I think you can.
Banana peel thing real quick. You know, banana peel,
is a
long... it's been around for years and years and years. You know, when guys, you know, need their skates sharpened, they always say, you know, I feel like I'm skating on banana peels out here or whatever, when they don't have, you know, sharp edges on their skates or whatever. It's kind of been a long-used hockey term. And I'm like you guys, I don't want to sit there and try to dissect what Chris Bartsch was saying. You know, I mean, he's a little bit of a hothead. He's got that reputation. So with that reputation, comes with a little bit of doubt and some unbelievability, if there is such a word as such, you know. So I don't know. You know, it's hard to say.
Do you think that, given the context and knowing culturally, like the Cosell thing I was talking about before and Billy Packer got in trouble too, like, do you understand where the NHL comes from with a one-game suspension, or do you think that with this being a go-to chirp for some guys, they should have just let it go?
Well, I think the NHL doesn't know what to do. They're scared in terms of how they react. If they don't react with a one-game suspension, will they be called a racist league? Will the racism angle kind of be brought into play? And the league's very scared of that. I mean, this is, you know, I know the league talked about how diverse this league is. I mean, it's not very diverse. I mean, there's a lot of different countries represented. So from that standpoint, there is some diversity. But this is not the NBA or the NFL. I guess there's not a whole lot of diversity in those leagues anymore either. But still, you know where I'm going with it. And I think it's a very sensitive subject, and it's one that the league, if you're Brendan Shanahan or Gary Bettman, anybody who's working at that level with the National Hockey League, believe me, these guys don't want to tackle these issues. When these issues come up, these guys want to crawl under a rock and hide. Nobody wants to be front and center when these type of issues come up.
You know what? You are so right about that, because I would imagine if I'm Colin Campbell and I'm reading the report from Dennis Gibbs, I'm saying to myself, I really don't need this in my life. Why are we dealing? I would much rather just ignore this and say it's a dumb chirp on the ice. Subban himself said he didn't hear it. Can this just please go away?
You know what? It's funny you bring that up, Jeffy, because, you know, I was talking with a couple of African American, well, you know, some black players that are they African American if they're from Canada? How does that work, Jeffy? Help me out with that.
Afro-Canadian. Afro-Canadian.
African-North American.
Okay.
Some
Afro-North American players who play in the
not
NHL.
Afro. That's offensive.
Well, some African-North Americans who play in the National Hockey League, okay? Now you're going to make me all of a sudden turn into Colin Campbell and make me go high under a rock. But
hey,
you know,
hey, honky, just make your point.
There you go.
Hey, we're having trouble hearing you from under your hood.
Hey, easy now. So anyway, you know, they all said to me, hey, what was said? And only thing I could get out of out of Chris Bartsch's agent, who I happen to know pretty well. He's represented some blues guys in the past, and he's a Chicago guy. Lives out in L.A. now, but he's been a Midwestern guy. And he said, you know, just make sure you get out there that it wasn't the most offensive word that's commonly associated with racism. So I think that was kind of sufficient enough for a couple of the black players that play in the NHL. And I personally, I think this particular term is going to go through one ear and out the other of probably just about every black player that plays in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. All right, let's move on to the St. Louis Blues. Big news this week. Matthew Hulsizer's bid apparently over for the Blues, Mr. Strickland?
Well, yeah. I mean, how annoyed are you guys with this story? Because I've been covering it every day, and I'm very annoyed with it. And I think people here in St. Louis are incredibly annoyed with it because think about how confusing this has been. Dave Checketts, the chairman of the Blues, really going back like 20 months ago, was, you know, he told me on my radio show live at the Scott Trade Center when they introduced Jaroslav Halak, okay, that he would be, have new partners and remain in charge by the beginning of the calendar year. This was 2 years ago, okay? Then all of a sudden he moved it up to the All-Star game. Nothing happened there. Which is why I've nicknamed Dave Checketts Deadline Dave, okay? So he's had all these deadlines, and then all of a sudden Matt Hulsizer comes into the picture after everything else that took place during the summer in terms of individual groups making bids and deadlines to make bids and all this type of stuff, and you hear about a verbal agreement, then you hear about a purchase agreement, and then you hear, wait, there's a mediation in New York where Gary Bettman is the mediator and Dave Checketts is on one side and Tom Stillman, the minority owner of the St. Louis Blues, is on the other. And a deadline is given for Hulsizer to meet. Otherwise, they're going to turn this thing over to Stillman. So, you know, Hulsizer doesn't meet the December 31st deadline. He's still texting me saying that he could have this thing done by the end of the week. You know, so he still believes he has a chance. And then now Stillman has been assured by the NHL, once he gets this purchase agreement in place with Dave Checketts, that he will have exclusivity and have about 75 days. That, you know, larger window to try to get this thing closed. So it's not over yet, but it's very, very annoying for a lot of people who have been following this story because of the confusion. But, yes, to answer your question, it does look like Matt Hulsizer is now on the outside looking in. Although he does say, if Stillman can't get it done, I will be keeping my seat warm. Me and my son are still wearing Blues gear, and we are big fans of the St. Louis Blues, and we expect another chance to become the next owner of the Blues.
Well, we once saw him in a Phoenix Coyotes hat as well. Now,
well, he was wearing the jersey. You know, I heard the great stories, by the way, of a couple of Phoenix players, of how he came into the dressing room wearing a Brizgalov jersey, and, Brizgalov, you know, started talking about, you know, the solar system and whatever else he got into at the time, and was like, this guy is a little crazy. Then he took the entire team out for dinner, and so that was a little bit of a premature celebration. Listen, he was in town a couple of weeks ago, by the way, telling some Blues staffers and upper management. They met with like eight individuals with the St. Louis Blues and upper management that he would have this thing done by December 16th. And he told the banks the tentative closing date was the 23rd. So we haven't met any of these deadlines. And all I know is that Hulsizer now is on the outside looking in. Gary Bettman said, enough with this. Let's move forward and see what we can get done with Tom Stillman, who's a very good guy, by the way.
I remember the Hulsizer story in Phoenix because Paul Bissonnette tweeted about it. I think he actually tweeted pictures from the dinner with Matthew Hulsizer. And sort of what I was getting to with Matthew Hulsizer and the St. Louis Blues, because when the rumors really heated up around Matthew Hulsizer and Andy, we heard stories that he was going to bring in Orin Kulas as well as a partner. There was some vague reference to the Ice Edge guys as well. But the speculation was that Orin Kulas was going to be part of this.
Yeah.
They were going to, you know, blow up the front office. And, you know, we started to hear whispers of Brian Lawton making return because of his association with Orin Kulas. And I kind of read the Davis Payne firing as Doug Armstrong saying, all right, Hulsizer is going to own this thing. Kulas is going to come in. I'm going to get fired. If that's going to happen, I'm doing it with my guys. And that's why he went out and got Ken Hitchcock.
Yeah, I think it's easy to read into it that way, although I don't think Doug Armstrong was completely in jeopardy, just based off of the way, you know, he's kind of performed at his job over recent years. You know, he met with Matt Hulsizer. Now, listen, I think John Davidson, who has the title, Director of Hockey Operations, or President of Hockey Operations, whatever it is, you know, I think he was probably more in jeopardy. In fact, he met with Hulsizer several weeks ago in Chicago. And, you know, I'm a little confused over what Orin Kulas' role would be. You know, I've spoken to him almost on a daily basis, And originally, I got the impression that he was going to be heavily involved with the hockey team. And then the last couple of weeks, it kind of fizzled down to being, you know what, I'm pretty much just going to be an investor. I'm going to be on the outside looking in. I'm not uprooting my family, moving to St. Louis. I won't be there. You won't see me. I won't be at the draft table on draft day. I'm going to be on the outside looking in. So I don't know if somebody from the league got the whole size or coolest and said, listen, you cannot have a prominent role with the organization, you know, or whatever. But something changed from that standpoint. I heard the name Don Maloney on numerous occasions, and I had somebody very close to Holsizer confirm that to me just the last couple of days, that they have remained in contact with one another, and that was a name that could end up finding his way to St. Louis. Doug Armstrong, though, on the other hand, let me just put it this way, because everyone's asking, will he keep Doug Armstrong? Doug Armstrong's a pretty confident guy. He's got a ton of contacts around the league. Certainly his visibility with Hockey Canada during the Olympics, I think, helped him. And it wasn't always going to be about whether or not Holsizer was going to keep Armstrong. If Doug Armstrong didn't like what was going on here, believe me, he would have left on his own because he's confident he could find a job and manage elsewhere.
Last one for me, Andy Strickland from TrueHockey.com. If you're looking at the St. Louis Blues, you're looking at what is a playoff team at this point, 22-12-5 overall, third in the Central Division. Your biggest point of concern about the Blues going forward?
Well, there's a couple of them. I know you asked for one, but one of them, I think in the playoffs, you know, I always believe you need three defensemen who can play 25 minutes or more every single night to really make it four rounds. And I don't think this is a cup-contending team, but you never know, right? I think they're good enough to win a round or two. You look at the Western Conference, they've beaten all the top teams in the West, Detroit, Chicago, San Jose, Vancouver, Nashville. I know they lost to Detroit a couple times in the last couple of weeks, and I don't think they're where Detroit or Chicago is. But I think if you were to add a true stud defenseman with experience to help out the young guys like Shattenkirk and Petrangelo, I mean, the most experienced defenseman they have right now is Barrett Jackman, and he's 30 years of age. I think, and he's got limited playoff experience. If you could bring somebody on board with some serious experience who can still play with some toughness, I think that would help. And then obviously goal scoring. This team doesn't score an awful lot of goals, but they have some guys that are underachieving right now in Patrick Berglund and Chris Stewart, to name a couple of them. So I think that would be my plan B, to add a little more offensive punch. But believe me, Doug Armstrong will be looking to add. He's told me that come trade deadline time, they're going to look to add a couple pieces, which is nice because the last couple of years, this has been one of the prominent teams in the league when it comes to selling off players for draft picks.
Who's untouchable? Andy, last one from me.
Well, I think TJ Oshie would certainly be untouchable. David Backes, Alex Petrangelo, Kevin Shattenkirk, David Perron. I think those are a few you look at right off the bat who are certainly untouchable.
You're the goods, man. Thanks so much
You're
for doing
good.
This, as always, Andy.
Don't be a stranger. I like coming on with you guys.
Oh,
we just started this thing. We've only done it. We've only done like what, three,
we're
4 weeks
like
for the show.
Episode 35. Yeah, jeez.
Yeah, man. Don't
where
worry.
How do I listen to this on a daily basis?
Well, go to sportsnet.ca or the Puck Daddy website. We air it live. Then you can get it in the U.S. on Feedburner, in Canada on iTunes.
And also iTunes in the U.S. You can go to and everybody. We, you know, we have 50
are
people.
We on,
who,
hang on.
50
are we
people
on iTunes
rated us five stars on iTunes.
Really?
And, yeah, that's true.
How about
we
that?
On, we on iTunes in the States. I thought it was just Canada. We're on iTunes
in the
States.
No, it's in the States as well. That's where I get
love it. Beautiful.
Keep doing
beautiful. See, I don't even know. I don't even know, Andy, so I don't blame you.
Well, Andy, in the words of Pierre Maguire, go have fun out there.
I will do so.
Thanks, bro. Keep in touch, man.
Have a great day, fellas.
There he is, the great Andy Strickland. Man, I loved. You know when I got to know Andy? Because Andy and I know each other really well. You know when I really got to know Andy?
Where?
Was when the Mike Danton and David Frost stuff was happening. Because
Andy
was all over this story. And
Jeffrey Danton.
Yeah, Jeffrey Danton. And I know the Jefferson family now estranged with their son, Mike Danton. So Andy and I got, you know, pretty close comparing notes and comparing stories. And both received very angry at times incoherent phone calls from both David Frost and some of his other little minions as well. It was a very strange. One day we'll do the David Frost story here on the podcast. But, man, I had some weird, and everyone has, I think, who got too close to the story, had some weird run-ins with David Frost.
Is Pierre Maguire bilingual?
Yes.
Do you think that he could become the next GM of the Habs?
See, his name always pops up for every position.
He's
right?
been up he's, for about three or four jobs.
Well,
and,
because you know what? I think that, you know, Gary Bettman, as commissioner of the NHL, always sort of doesn't tell owners who to hire, but he encourages certain candidates, right? Like, I mean, he had encouraged Colin Campbell to take There was the Philly job, I think Columbus, maybe Minnesota, I think. And there have been others where he, I mean, listen, if it weren't for, if everyone who's listening in Tampa, if it weren't for Gary Bettman, you wouldn't have Steve Yzerman. Because it was on, you know, it was on Gary Bettman's implore that Steve Yzerman left Detroit to go to Tampa. So he is very influential. And he's always, because, you know, Pierre has been a very good foot soldier for the NHL. Like, he's done a lot of work for the National Hockey League. And it's, I don't think it's exactly a secret that I'm sure Pierre McGuire would love to get back in the game in a general manager's capacity. So Gary has always nudged owners towards Pierre McGuire. So would it surprise me? Absolutely not.
We would certainly miss him on American television if that were to happen.
I know you don't like him. I know I'm in the minority, but I know. Listen, man, this guy brings so much valuable information that for an info junkie like me, I soak it up.
You know who I do like?
Who dat?
Brian Burke. And Brian Burke held court today, and this is some of these are some of the things that we heard today, Merrick, from Brian Burke speaking on things like, for example, pests.
I know the Greenpeace folks will be happy with this, but I wonder where we're going, where Brendan Shanahan's got six hearings every 2 days, and you see the garbage that happened in here the other night. And I wonder the accountability in our game and the notion that players would stick up for themselves and for each other, I wonder where we're going with it. That's a fear that if we don't have guys looking after each other, that the rats will take this game over. Because that's my fear. I see guys that run around and start stuff and won't back it up, and it makes me sick to my stomach. In the old days, they protected themselves, and then it evolved into players protecting their teammates. And now I'm not sure who's looking after it other than Brendan Shanahan. I just don't see accountability or respect in the game right now. Really, what I'm saying is I think he's got a lot more work than he should have. He needs a telephone receptionist in his house because of all this crap that's going on the ice, these guys that won't back it up, won't drop their gloves.
That was Brian Burke commenting today after Colton Orr cleared waivers. A couple of things historically on that, because I like to fill in the blanks. When Brian is talking about players used to handle it themselves, and then players fought on behalf of one another. You know, once upon a time in the NHL, and even though they weren't the toughest, Gordie Howe backed it up. He only had 22 fights in his career, but he did back it up. Maurice Richard fought, and these are two of the best players in the game at their time. That evolved in the mid to late 60s when you started to see the hired guns, the John Fergusons and the Orland Curtinbacks and these types of players who would fight on behalf of the team so the superstars didn't have to do the fighting. The frustration that Brian's finding now is that that role is evolving its way out. That, you know, to the point that we made off the top of the program, which was what Steve Yzerman's point was, we're replacing the fourth-line tough guy with the fourth-line pest. So for every Colton Orr that goes the way of the dodo bird, here's another Patrick Coletta. Are we better off as a game because of it? I mean, but at the same time, Brian Burke is decrying something that he's done.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, did Brian Burke have to waive Colton Orr? No? Not at all. I mean, that's his decision. I mean, it became pretty obvious that Colton Orr was struggling to play in this league. And that's why, listen, for all the people that say the fighting should be legislated out and the heavyweight who only plays 2 minutes should be legislated out of the league, I don't think you have to do that. I don't think you have to get all lawyerly about it and make a rule about you have to play a certain amount of minutes or else you can't play in the NHL. They are evolving their way out. Okay?
Exactly.
That player
they're becoming,
is going
becoming
now,
really, really good players with rat tendencies. And I mean, it's very easy for Brian Burke to stand up there and talk about the rats running the NHL when his rats were just happened to be really good players. Chris Pronger, for example, probably had how many suspensions as a Duck? I forget exactly. When the players are really, really good but play rat-like hockey, then I guess it's acceptable. It all balances out. But when they're not that good and they're rats, well, we need to throw them off the ship.
You know what confused me about Brian? And Brian Burke was talking about a game a couple of nights ago between the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Toronto Maple Leafs. And did Steve Downey run around a little bit? Yep, he's Steve Downey. But you know how Steve Downey did? Steve Downey dropped his gloves and was ready to take them all on. I mean, tried to get at Darryl Boyce, tried to get a number of different players as well. So it wasn't as if he was hit and run. And, you know, one of the hit-and-run guys around the NHL, and no one is talking about this because he's a wonderful player and he's a good dude and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, Dustin Brown doesn't have the best reputation in the NHL because he's hit-and-run. And he's a great body checker, but does he drop him? Nope, he doesn't. So He's considered one of these hit-and-run guys, and I think that's what Brian is concerned about as well, guys that just do the hit-and-run. Now, there's nothing to say you have to fight, but nonetheless, Downey was willing to fight, all right? Mm-hmm. Downey, and so that's why I'm confused.
Marchand.
As to what, as a, Brad Marchand's another example.
Yep.
I mean, he'll throw down.
Bell. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think that, I love the fact that fighting exists in this game. I want to see fighting continue in this game. It is a unique element in this game that I hope is never legislated out, because unlike any other game, you know, it has this very unique thing called fights that is spontaneous and sometimes planned. And even though they're planned, they're still good and I still enjoy them and I appreciate them. But there's a very unique element to hockey. And the one thing I never want to see happen in this game is some of the corners on this uniqueness rounded off, just so everyone feels nicer when they get themselves in the little favorite team's pajamas and go to sleep at night. I want it a little. Hockey's always best when it's AC/DC, when it's not, you know, it's not Kenny G. It's rock and roll. It's dirty. It's nasty. That's when it's at its best. You know, and speaking, here's some. Speaking of Steve Downey specifically. Steve Downey, when he was playing with the Peterborough Petes of the OHL, mm-hmm. was traded at the trade deadline to the Kitchener Rangers as then coached by now New Jersey head coach Peter DeBoer. And I remember talking to Peter when the trade happened, and this is after he went through a bunch of stuff with Akeem Alou in Windsor, and that's a high-profile incident in junior hockey. I said, Peter, you know, you're a Memorial Cup contending team. Like, you're one of the best teams in the OHL. Why would you go and grab Steve Downey, freestyle artist? He's, you know, doesn't listen. He's radical out there. He's dangerous on the ice. He's going to hurt someone out there. He's going to hurt the reputation of you and your team and all that. And you know what Peter DeBoer said to me? And this has always stayed with me. He said, Jeff, I understand all these things. And you're right. Is he dangerous? Is he reckless? Yep. Is he crazy? At times, he certainly is. But I would rather try to tame a tiger than have to paint stripes on a kitty cat. And it's so freaking true. It's so true. And when you think about, like, when you go to the draft, for example, how many times you heard a general manager say things like, you know, he's got a mean streak, he's nasty, he's tough to play against. These are the guys that you work with and you mold, right? What mm-hmm. would you think, Greg, if Lou Lamoriello went to the draft, made a pick, and then in his post-selection interview said, well, you know what? He's a safe player, he's very respectful, and he won't hurt anyone, and that's why we like him.
Era, we are going to try to turn Adam Larson into Brian Marchmont. But no, but you're right, because like, you think about it, here's the example today, right? The Buffalo Sabres. Like, the Buffalo Sabres, the solution everybody had for the Sabres after the Lucic-Miller thing was, well, just get nasty.
Who's getting nasty?
They're a bunch of pussycats with the stripes, right?
Yeah, you can't turn that team into a nasty bunch. Now, yeah. The Boston Bruins are at a different level. Like, they are the throwback team. And they have a swagger about them now because they're highly skilled and they're really tough. Like, they are the envy of 20, whether they want to admit it or not, they are the envy of 29 other teams in the National Hockey League. The way that team plays, the way that team carries itself. Who wouldn't want to be the Boston Bruins? Greg?
Their junk has grown exponentially since they won the Stanley Cup. Their junk is so big right now.
They're dragging it.
Oh, God. I'd be shocked if I didn't see it thrown on the ice on the next Lars Eller hat trick. Now, speaking of legislating players and styles out of the league, sir, Dan Carcillo, suspension.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
I was right because I changed. Remember?
Right, exactly.
Here's what I didn't. I understand why Dan Carcillo was suspended. I understand that the NHL, because he's had... Hey, and didn't you have that Ferris Bueller moment when Brendan Shanahan said he's been suspended 9 times? Didn't you kind of get Jeffrey Jones in the back? He's been absent 9 times this year, Mrs. Bueller. I kind of had that in my head the whole time.
9 times,
yes. I know why he was suspended. There was an injury, and he's Dan Carcillo. And it looked like a rough play. It looked like a very violent play. I stand by my analysis of it yesterday and how I feel that it worked, and if the idea that Tom Gilbert didn't have another exit strategy is fallacy, because he could have just given Dan Carcillo the lane like a lot of other elite-level defensemen, Nicholas Drum looking your direction, probably would have. The one thing that I had a problem with in the explanation was Brendan Shanahan saying that Tom Gilbert was defenseless and in a vulnerable position, because he wasn't. He had the opportunity to bail. Because if you look at Tom Gilbert, the first thing he does is he turns his head to the right and he sees the player beside him and then sticks out his arm like, we're going to engage now, like you always do. So the idea that he didn't know this was coming is just not true. Is just fallacy, because it's a standard bump before you go to the puck. So for that one, I can't pick up what Shanahan is putting down. I know why he's suspended.
Yeah, we both do because he's Carcillo. And if you talk about players, we go back to the whole rat thing, right? Well, part of the mandate for Shanahan in taking this gig is the Board of Governor guys and the GMs all saying, look, there is a collection of like a dozen guys in this league, and I think Carcillo's one. I think Wesniewski's probably one. I think that
Coletta.
I think Torres should be one, although he wasn't suspended like that.
I think
Bork is now one. After getting five games for the chicken wing on Backstrom, there's a collection of guys in this league that just don't get it, and they keep doing this shit, and you have to keep suspending them greater and greater and greater and taking more and more money until you can somehow have a breakthrough. And it's not the majority of the National Hockey League running afoul of the Department of Player Safety. It's like the same guys over and over again. So you throw the book at Carcillo, you do what you can. Now, the interesting thing about the Carcillo suspension is that he's hurt. And he will serve the suspension in games in which he would not have played anyway. And I was told that even if he was on injured reserve, the suspension would still carry, would count. Those games would count.
Yeah, as a Joel Quenneville
said today. That's insane. I mean, you talk about all the things we need to fix in the next CBA. The fact that injured players are time served in a suspension
is
asinine.
Well, he's not getting paid, though, Greg.
Yeah,
if he's just on IR, he'd still be getting paid.
Well, thanks, Gilstein.
Now I'm going to engineer my way into the Hockey Hall of Fame. Watch this little sleight of hand.
Yeah,
I know it smells stinky, but
it's very stinky.
I don't know that that's a big enough hill for the NHL to die on during a CBA negotiation.
No, because they feel like they take the money, so that's good enough. But like.
Yeah.
From a fan perspective, like you could just, it's like taking a vacation. It's like going and going to the.
You can't take a vacation because he's
the baths in Iceland for a while.
He's lighter in the he's lighter. You know what was interesting about the Joel Quenneville quote? The fact that he said that we expected this when we signed him. We knew this was the cost of doing business.
Yeah.
You know, and you look at and the best example of this is the guy that you already brought up earlier in the program, Chris Pronger, because early in his career, Chris Pronger took what we all now know now as investment suspensions. Like, Chris Pronger is not that dirty of a hockey player anymore. You know why? Because no one goes near him. No one goes near him because that reputation has been established. He's taken his investment suspensions. He did it all when he was younger, and he bought himself space around him. Right? And that is just – ask anyone who's done it. That's the cost of doing business. If you want to be that type of player who buys yourself that space, that is the cost of doing – every now and then, you got to take yourself a nickel suspension.
Just
to buy yourself the reputation.
And that's why I hope nobody intends to make a play behind the play when they play the Phoenix Coyotes. Because Rafi Torres, oh boy, don't you try to pass that puck out of your own end, boy. Because the Torres train's coming at ya.
Hey, you know what? We started a segment yesterday, and we had the Brenda Lee in the background playing off my little Mac here in my little office in my little house here in the west end of the city of Toronto, but now the production element is all set, and we thought we would do, we joked yesterday, Greg, hey, let's do this daily, wouldn't that be fun? Turns out we're doing the Today and I'm Sorry daily, because you know what we have today, Greg?
What's that?
We have a mea culpa. I'm sorry today.
Please.
And Elena, if you could fire up the Brenda Lee back at the radio station here, yes? It's a, I'm sure this will become a regular feature on the podcast, Greg, as more and more players now just come out with the I'm sorry. Here we go.
I'm sorry.
It sounds so nice when Brenda sings it, isn't it?
It's lovely.
All right. This is Rene Bork of the Calgary Flames. After being suspended for five games by the National Hockey League for his elbow on Washington centerman Nick Backstrom. Quote, I acknowledge my mistake. I regret my action and take full responsibility. I accept the decision rendered by Brendan Shanahan on behalf of the league. I apologize to my teammates, the Flames organization, and to Nicklas Backstrom. I am embarrassed for what I did. These are exactly the type of plays that need to be eliminated from hockey. Rene Bork, starring in today's edition of Today in I'm Sorry.
Well, that's wonderful. I feel like it was very sincere as well.
You know, well, and we saw this with Jay Feaster as well, the GM of the Calgary Flames. My favorite line in this apology I accept the decision rendered by Brendan Shanahan. What else are you going to do? You're going to say, I don't accept it and I'm going to play?
Like, he had a muscle spasm. He wasn't trying to hit him in the head. It was an unfortunate muscle spasm.
Like Jay Feaster of the Calgary Flames put out a press release as well, saying that they accept the decision and will abide by it. Well, what other option do you have? You can try to dress Bork? Try that one. Put him on a game. Get Sutter to put his name and number down on a game sheet. See what happens. Like, what other option do you have? We accept it and we'll respect it.
In the remaining minutes, let's do some question of the day stuff. We got a lot of responses here, and we appreciate them all. It's just that we're a little pressed for time. Ian McLaren writes in regards to today's question, it seems as though getting into the business of suspending players for language on the ice is a very slippery slope, like a banana peel. For one thing, potentially offensive language is no doubt spewed during pretty much every shift, so Shanny would need to hire an assistant just to wade through each case and to discern what's worthy of suspension. At the same time, what might be offensive to one person may be seen as of little consequence to someone else. So who determines that line that you can't go over? That's an excellent point.
Yep.
Why didn't PK Subban just say, come on, you don't got to give this guy anything. It's fine. Did he do that, you think?
I don't know. So I couldn't say one way or another. And, well, the only thing that we know that PK Subban said is he said that he didn't hear it. Like, is it still a racial taunt? If the player doesn't hear it.
Peter Plavitis writes in, the NHL has already been in the business of suspending for speech. Gestures are speech, and they have suspended for those in the past. Wisniewski's two games comes quickly to mind, and I'm sure there are others.
Nick Boynton, throw slash, you got a game for it. I know that one.
And while they are regulating speech, maybe they shouldn't just worry about race and do something about all of the homophobic and gender-based comments. A very good point that was shared. Who was shared by that? This is TV's Brent writes in, get rid of the chauvinism and using femininity as an insult as well. Pro athletes have to evolve along with everyone else.
Well, that is interesting because as much as we point to the racial taunts, as we pointed out yesterday when I cited the former San Jose coach who taunted Donald Brashear in a pretty disgusting way, racist taunts really don't exist that much in the National Hockey League. But you know what does? Homophobic ones, man. Every single shift. And that's why, you know, the point when we were talking with Andy Strickland, this is not something the NHL wants to deal with, because you could suspend someone, if you want to get into that game, every single shift for using the pickle word. You could, dude. Greg, you've been, you know, close to the rink before. How many times have you ever heard the pickle word?
Many.
Right. Like every game, every shift. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone in the league's going to, and if you don't think your superstars have used it, folks, I got news for you. They all have. Here, this one from Eric Bernard. Okay. If it's on the ice, the NHL has to act. World no longer works on boys will be boys. See, I don't know about that one because I'm still the belief that there is that suspension that you make when you engage in sports, specifically at the professional level. There's a suspension of rights. But nonetheless, I'm in a minority perhaps on that one. Now I am.
Bradley Idlecope, I wrote this as well, and I agree with it. Something that needs to be pointed out is that bananas are sensitized to the NHL thanks to some jackass in London, Ontario, who threw one at Wayne Simmonds during the shootout in September. I think that plays into it. I think that incident and the nature of it definitely affected this decision. It added to the context. The other interesting thing that's been brought up by a few fans today with regard to the one-game suspension, did this have anything to do with the fact that the Panthers and Rangers are going to be playing their first game since the Kopechki sucker punch incident, getting Barch away from that game?
I didn't even think about that.
It's not like they don't read the schedule.
No, I know. You're right about that. Who's coming in next? Let's heads up on this one. I don't know. I'd like to say that I don't think so, but I could be swayed. See, this one to me was weird. I know we talked about, you know, the culture of it and the inference of it versus the actual taunt as well. I don't know how. I'm still coming back to the same one. I'll make the same argument. If it's not a racial taunt, how is it a one-game suspension? But does the Ranger game play into it? Maybe, because they do read the sked. But hey, man, I'm gonna plug my nose and say no, but I could be convinced otherwise.
Yeah. All right, well, good stuff. Time to end this fun. Should be a good night. Remember, folks, season finale. I've heard it's a very, very good episode. I've heard that maybe it culminates in one of those tear-jerking, peons to hockey with the dramatic music and
Liev Schreiber doing the commentary as the Philadelphia Flyers and the New York Rangers go on the frozen lake and blah, blah, blah.
All that stuff at the end of 24/7 tonight. So we'll have a full recap of the show on Friday, including clips. And,
you know what was interesting about today's show, Greg?
What's that?
On any other day where the general manager of the Anaheim Ducks says, we're open for business, and you can have Bobby Ryan, Ryan Getzlaff, or Corey Perry. The only sacreds here are the two Finns. That would dominate the program. Not on the show, folks.
That, yeah, not only that, you know, you have Rick Nash saying, if they said I was no longer wanted here, I'd waive my no-trade clause.
We didn't do a thing. Not a mention. Until now.
Well, in fairness, it did happen last night, so, you know, news cycle being what it is these days.
Don't you miss
the days when something would happen the night before, and then, you could wait until noon the next day to write about it or talk about it?
Well, you know what's funny now?
There's a 15-second window of opportunity now to cover the news.
And whenever I'll tweet out, like, to the point where I'm always like, why am I even bothering to tweet out information? If you tweet something that's, like, 20 minutes old, you get a flood of, that's old news now, jackass. Oh, way to be last on the story, dip. Did you get that, too?
The greatest thing ever was at the Winter Classic when they announced in the press box the attendance. They announced the number for the attendance, and then literally
everybody,
an entire press box of 300 journalists all tweeted the attendance over and I said to myself, should I just wait like 3 hours and just tweet it? Would anybody get the joke if all of a sudden the attendance showed up in their feed?
But you know the best at ridiculing that is?
Who?
We have to have on the show. Your buddy David Lozo from NHL.com.
Lozo's hilarious.
He is awesome at that. We all love, you know, Sean over at Down Goes Brown. I don't know, man. Lozo's up there. Follow him, man. David Lozo, Twitter. Do it. You'll thank me later.
All right. I am Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports. Once again, apologies for the voice. I'm still trying to find time to go and get some antibiotics to kill this thing.
Why don't you just go to the doctor, dude? I went yesterday.
I don't have time. Well, because the NHL keeps suspending people for saying banana. So I don't have time to go to the doctor.
All right. Hey, listen. If you're an NHLer tonight, two things. Work sober and don't say banana. Please, just for the good of the game, don't say banana. It's too confusing. Jeff Merrick signing off. Tonight doing what am I doing tonight? Edmonton and St. Louis. That game available on Sportsnet. West.
I like the idea of whenever somebody mentions banana now, the linesman has to go, did somebody say banana? And then the benches go, ah! I think it's a secret word. Perfect.
We have a new secret word on this show, pickle. I think that's going to find a home.
I think it's going to find
a home, Greg, you pickle.
You pickle.
You
pickle. Let's stop being such a pickle and sign off.
You're calling me a pickle.
You know what?
You're calling
That's
me
fine.
A pickle?
As a Battlestar Galactica fan who freely uses the word frack instead of other words, I think pickle's fine.
After your weekend in Philadelphia, you're calling someone else a pickle? With you know
All right, you fracking pickles. You we'll talk to you later. Bye.